Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Dave Ritchie got a hold of us by way of text during the break. I thought Dave made some really good points talking about one of the issues is the PIAA going to six divisions. I think Dave's right about that. That causes more under 500 teams to make it. I have a solution to that, or at least an idea of a solution. And, you know, it's funny because I saw Dr. Lombardi 2 weeks ago. I probably should have brought this up with him then, but I was actually the featured speaker, so I was really kind of getting up to do my deal. But this is what I think they should do with the PIAA. They should keep the six divisions, except they should go back to the old system of single A, double A, triple, and quad for all the public schools. And then they should have the other two divisions be for smaller and charter schools that are non-public, and have the other division be for larger non-public schools. I think they should go to that, where now you can crown state champions in both public and parochial schools. They should go back to the single, double, triple, and quad A for all the public schools. And I think that the non-public schools should have one class A, one class double A. That's it. In other words, you know, put the cutoff, pick a number. You're under this number of students. When it comes to the non-public schools, you'll be competing for the state championship. The number above, you're competing for a state championship. That's it. I think that's what they've got to do. I think they've got to be able to sit there and get back to some semblance. You've got to get back to some semblance of order with all of this. I totally appreciate completely the idea of crowning a state champion. But the non-public schools, in terms of the ability to get talent from a wide variety of areas, has really tilted this too much in their direction. And look, there are parents that make the decision to send their child to a charter school. There are parents that make the decision that send their child to a Catholic school. That is, and they do it absolutely, they don't do it at all for athletic reasons. They do it because they feel that's the best education for their child.
Do you think it's a bigger problem for football or for basketball, or do you think it's even for both?
I think it's even for both. But in other words, you can still play for a state championship. You're just playing now for a state championship with like-minded athletic causes here, as opposed to I'm playing for my town. I mean, let's take Bishop Guilfoyle, for example. Bishop Guilfoyle is a power around in the state in both basketball, especially girls basketball, and in football. Now, and I have zero idea what the makeup of Bishop Guilfoyle is in Altoona. Zero. Right? But they can get players from State College if they want. They can get players from Johnstown if they want. They can get players from Hollidaysburg if they want. You know, they are made up of a wide variety. Okay? I remember the late Renee Portland sent one of her children to go to school at Bishop Guilfoyle, but she only sent Stephen there because of the educational part, because, I mean, you know, it wasn't really a player. He knew how to play, but it was for the education part of it. She wanted to keep him in a Catholic school. Okay. That's fine. A lot of parents make that decision. Or to go in a charter school. A lot of parents make that decision, and they make their decision for good reasons. Now let's get to the athletic part. Go back to public schools of A, double, triple, and quad A, and then have and keep the six championship games, because one's going to be smaller schools that are non-public, and the other one's going to be larger schools non-public. And that's how I'd go about going with six, keeping it the way, you know, and creating, yeah, a division between the two, because it's been proven over time that there needs to be a division between the two. Now, what do you think of that?
Makes sense.
That's what this show's all about. I've been trying to tell everybody that.
Since 2012.
Right. I mean, like, time now for the play-by-play call of the day. Oh, a big home run for the Brewers last night.
On the warning track, at the wall, it's gone! Orlando Arcia goes the other way. It's 4-0 Brewers.
All right, Brewers won it 4-0 last night, even though they'd hold the Dodgers off, bases loaded, one out in the bottom of the ninth inning. But they'll play game four coming up tonight. They're the late game at 9:09. Red Sox and Astros an hour from now. Dallas Keuchel for the Astros, and Nathan Eovaldi on the mound for the Red Sox. And that one, that series tied at a game apiece. All right, you know, Josh Allen scuffling, not doing well. Nathan Peterman had to take over. I mean, I feel like we're helping certain Buffalo Bills fans along the way when we talk about them get through their tough times. Neil Coolong joins us. Hello, Neil. How are you today?
Jim Kelly isn't walking through that door. Thurman Thomas isn't walking through that door, but Josh Allen is. Maybe.
Andre if Reed not, is not walking through that door, man.
I feel so bad. I'm dirty.
Oh, no, I do. Believe me, I feel awful. I really do. As funny as this segment is so far, I feel awful about this. Neil is currently, by the way, at Arnold Palmer Airport in Latrobe because they think that's where Bell might land. Okay.
He got lost.
All right, I want to ask you something. Is there any idea? Because, look, James Conner has done zero to lose his job. Zero. If Bell decides that next week is the week, what do you do with him?
I put him on the field with James Conner. You guys might remember that the Steelers at one point had D'Angelo Williams and Le'Veon Bell in kind of a similar situation, although Williams probably wasn't quite what Conner is right now, and they certainly didn't have this much time on the field to get an idea of what Williams could be the way that Connor has. Put both of them on the field. How are you going to defend that? Imagine a Le'Veon Bell Steelers backfield. When you start pre-snap, he's in the backfield, Connor is in the backfield. In other words, this team can throw and run at a high rate of explosion. How do you defend that? At that point, my opinion is you've already made your decision. I'm not sure what a defense can do in terms of package and personnel. How do you defend that? So for me, it's not about getting Bell reps. It's not about getting Connor carries. It's more what they can show before the ball is snapped. And from there, let Roethlisberger figure out how they're going to gain yards. I don't know how you stop that. That's the position they're in today, and in many ways, this is exactly the ideal scenario the Steelers hoped for going into this. Granted, they'd probably be better than 3-2-1, but it's a great position for them to be in.
I mean, they're only half game back in the standings despite all the trials and tribulations of how the opening month and a half has gone. They're half game back.
Yeah, a weird set of circumstances, too, because you get whipped by the Ravens, you tie with the Browns, and you win one game over the Bengals, which, frankly, you usually win games over the Bengals.
Sure.
For them to be in the position that they're in now, with Bell coming back, it's kind of crazy. You know, I wrote the season off, you know, 3 weeks ago, like everybody else did, right? What they have now going into this game, I really think, or going into the bye week, I mean, I really think the Steelers have the upper hand on the rest of the AFC simply because teams are not going to know what they're going to do when Bell gets on the field. And that seems really weird because Le'Veon Bell coming back to the Steelers shouldn't have happened at all. But they managed a decent record in the time that he was gone, and they established James Conner, who very well could be a Pro Bowl running back, the way that we're seeing it now. They have limitless options of what they can do offensively. And if we've seen anything in the first 6 weeks of the NFL season, it's the defense doesn't really matter a whole lot.
Yeah.
So you've got offense. You've got the capability of blanketing teams with talent on the field. They could do that. It's possible.
See, I put them on kickoff coverage the first week. Tell me. I'm sorry.
It could be.
See, that's what I do.
Better than a lot of guys they have now.
Yeah. Could, yeah, although I'd be hoping Boswell kicked it out of the end zone just to kind of avoid any issues with it.
Kick the ball out of the end zone. Don't let him return it.
Don't let him return it.
I don't want to do that at halftime.
I just want you to get in shape. Here are your sprints. and do that. Look, they only gave up 21 in that game. Now, I know they gave up points late, but are they playing better defensively?
You know, I might have said that before. For me, having watched Cincinnati, I thought the Bengals had a lot more mental lapses offensively than I would have expected them to have.
I don't think
they played very well.
I think they pressed. I think they were desperate to win this game and show the Steelers how good they are. I think they pressed.
That's an amazing concept, considering you've got all control over the division.
I know.
You know, it's not easy to beat a Steelers team. I get that, but you didn't have to do a whole lot. But the first play of the game, they had a legal man downfield. I mean, these are the scripted plays of the game.
I know.
Those are the ones you need to know more than anything. Those are the ones, frankly, you do know. For them to have had as many mental blanks as they had early, they got it together. The last drive of both the first half and the second half, that was much more the Bengals team that I've seen this year. They're dangerous. They are explosive. They're versatile. I thought Andy Dalton played a much better game than his statistics will give him credit for. A lot of guys let him down. A.J. Green dropped three passes or something like that. I don't know if he's had a game like that in his career. I think this is really kind of the problem with Cincinnati. The Steelers get in their head. You know, I mean, it shouldn't have happened the way that it happened. But with that, they still had a chance to win the game. They let Pittsburgh back into the door a little bit, and then the Steelers did what the Steelers should be doing all season long. They're able to put a team away late in the game, which is what they did. I wasn't sure they were going to be able to do it. They impressed me. Pittsburgh did offensively with that last drive.
Yep.
But the coup de grace of the whole thing, the defense that they played on that touchdown pass, I don't want to hear anything about offensive pass interference. It's absolutely ridiculous to suggest that might have been the case. The defense,
especially on the line of scrimmage.
Yeah, I mean, come on, you're pressing the guy. Okay, nobody's going to call offensive pass interference if you're in man. Everybody can see you're in man, and you're pressing the receiver. It's a technique issue.
But are you doing that within the 5 yards of the line of scrimmage? Of course you are. You're on the line of scrimmage.
Maybe a yard.
See, that's the part that isn't brought into play on that play. Are you within the 5 yards? The defender is allowed to make contact with you before the ball is released.
Yeah, the defender can hit you. But the real thing is, from the official's perspective, if the defender is the one initiating the contact, which he absolutely was, if you watch the play with Justin Hunter, what is Justin Hunter supposed to do? Granted, the defensive player is allowed to have that space, but there's nothing that says the offensive player has to get out of his way. I mean, come on. The Steelers baited the Bengals into that exact play.
Of course they did.
They called exactly what they did to go against the exact defense that they got. That's, to me, that is as much a mental mistake probably the Bengals made multiple of it in the second half, but that was as big a mental mistake as any other one that they've made in the last 10 years against this team. There's no reason to call that defense at that time. Their blitz didn't land the entire game.
No.
Why would you call that there? Why would you – look, Antonio Brown is literally 6 inches away from a 6'3", 210-pound wide receiver. Yeah. What do you think they're going to do? And you're in man coverage without a safety. Why would you do that? For me, the Bengals gave that game away more than anything else. I think the Bengals played less than what they are, more than the Steelers played up to who they are. And the Bengals are still, in my mind, probably a better team.
Yeah.
I really think that. But the Steelers were the ones who wanted to play and win the game. The Bengals didn't do that.
Yeah, which brings me to the next part. The Bengals have to play Kansas City this week. So, I mean, the Steelers could be right there. I mean, right there with them when they come back to play, because the Bengals have Kansas City next.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to see how many times the Bengals play cover zero against the Chiefs. That'll be good. The Chiefs are, without question, a better team than the Bengals are. But I think Cincinnati can still contend. They're a half game up on the Steelers. I'm not giving up hope on them in any stretch of the imagination right now. This was a game the Steelers had to win. If they didn't win, what we're talking about right now is basically the draft. I mean, they didn't have a choice. They had to win that game if they're going to compete. And they did what they needed to do on the field to get to a position where they're still competitive, to give Le'Veon Bell back, to figure out how they really are going to be a team. And this is when Mike Tomlin shines, really. It's post-bye, the second half. Cincinnati had an opportunity to really step on the Steelers' throat, but once again, just failed to do it. I still can't understand why or how. It's amazing. They're the Bengals. They're the Bengals.
Because I think they put so much pressure on themselves. I think, like themselves out in playing the game, they played the game too tight. Because to them, it was like Super Bowl for them. Just calm down, okay? It's week 7, okay? You're okay.
That's exactly it, though. I mean, they want to play for the Super Bowl every single week against the Steelers.
Right.
At some point, you have to understand, the Patriots don't play like that. You know, the Eagles didn't play like that last year. The Chiefs aren't playing like that. The Steelers don't play like that. Why do you have to get yourselves up to play the Steelers, okay? The Steelers have to play the Ravens. Now that the Browns seem to have their number, they have to play a lot of those games too.
I know.
There's really no reason why you have to have that sense of urgency when you're 4-1 on top of the division. And I can't get over how different that Brown or the Bengals defense was, or offense was, in this game versus the way they've been in their first 5 games of the season. I can't get past that.
All right, so in the second half, now with Bell back, do you see a Steeler team that each week appears to be getting better?
I do, because it really, the Steelers offense has a new offensive coordinator. There are certain things that opponents needed to kind of figure out what they were going to do with Randy Fickner. You put Bell back on that field, you really don't know what they're going to do. When you have the ability to run or pass with Le'Veon Bell on the field and a good running back there and an offensive line that might have just played the best game they've ever played together, you put all that together, it's really hard to see how you want to be able to defend that. So for me, more than anything, I look at Ben Roethlisberger, if I'm a defensive coordinator, and I wonder, what does he want to do in these situations? And then put Bell in there, what might he do? I'm not sure how much you're going to be able to stop that over 8-9 drives in a game. So for me, I think an offense going against Pittsburgh has to play for the throat. They've got to get 35-plus points if they're going to be able to win, because the Steelers' offense now is so explosive, and they've done it in a way that does not rely on kind of the way that they've done it in the past. You put all that together, that's going to be a really hard team to prepare for. And I'm not sure whoever's left on their schedule is going to be able to do it. I'm not saying it's out of line right now. The Steelers could run the table. It's possible. Baltimore is going to be a really tough team to beat. Cincinnati is going to be a really tough team to beat. But there aren't good defensive teams the rest of the way for Pittsburgh, I think, anyway.
And let's go back to where we started. What do you really think about Josh Allen?
He's a great runner. He's a great runner.
Terrific.
1942, I think he might have a career. But, you know, I'm a North Dakota State grad. I've talked about this a bunch of times. I knew Craig Ball. He was there for a couple months before I graduated.
Yep.
Big fan of the guy. Mm-hmm. He developed plenty at North Dakota State.
Yep.
And he was instrumental in developing Josh Allen. Josh Allen is the most technically flawed passer I think we've seen in a starting role probably the last 20 years in the NFL. The fact that he's had even a modicum of success to this point really just shows how astronomically talented that kid's arm is. I mean, it's unbelievable what he's able to do, and we've seen it. But if he's going to get benched for Nate Peterman, something's really wrong in Buffalo. What a tough job to be a head coach.
I
don't know how much longer Sean McDermott makes it. I really don't.
I wouldn't put Nathan Peterman in a game in the Alliance of American Football. Okay.
Yeah, if you're even in college, you know, do you want Josh Allen or Nate Peterman starting for you at the college level?
Right.
Is that an easy decision? I'm not even sure. And you're talking about, what, a fourth or fifth round pick, I forget what Peterman was, versus the seventh pick of the draft.
Let me ask you, are you going to watch the Alliance games when they come up?
Yeah, I'll take a peek.
Yeah, I will too.
It's always kind of fun to see. Not the names as much as I'm curious how they're being coached. I'm curious what they're doing. You never know. I mean, you look at the NFL today. How many of their concepts are really bred in college? And we've talked about this a bunch over the years. What the college game creates is what the pro game eventually becomes.
Right.
We are now seeing the genesis of that. Now we are really seeing pro teams embrace college concepts. The AAFL, whatever it is, it's going to be another offshoot of that. I'm curious how they want to coach it, how they want to play it, how it's being managed. See that probably within first 2-3 games. What exactly are they doing? You know,
I think they're developing.
That's really interesting.
I think they're developing talent for the NFL. I think they're developing roster spots 35 through 53.
Yeah, I think they could. And those guys, those roster spots are won, by and large, at least what we're told, during training camp. I don't agree with that. I think it they're won and lost based on who gets drafted. Let them get out there in the field and play. There are a lot of guys that might be able to show what they can do. I mean, Major League Baseball, a baseball player doesn't work out. It's because he isn't good enough. You know that. He survived in the minors. He either succeeded or he didn't. Football, you don't have that. You did it in college when you were 20 years old. I was talking with a couple buddies of mine back in Minnesota, big Vikings fans, about Danelle Hunter.
Okay.
I didn't like Danelle Hunter coming out of college. There were a lot of things that I didn't like about watching his game. Look at the job that Mike Zimmer has done with that guy.
Yeah.
He actually plays run now.
Yep.
Okay? He didn't do that before.
Kind of amazing.
Imagine that. You know, he's a multidimensional player, and he's a legit defensive player of the year candidate right now.
Yeah.
If a guy like that, I mean, he's a third-round pick. He had all the physicality of a first-round guy. Third-round pick. Imagine if a guy that didn't quite get to that level is a sixth or seventh-round pick, gets cut, doesn't work out for him. Practice squad is one thing. Imagine if he gets reps somewhere else, you know, in an environment where coaches get to watch him play and work with him. What might he be when he's 23, 24 years old?
Right.
I mean, you know, the NFL is a young man's game, and I get that, but largely it's because there isn't another option. Yep. They either play in the NFL or they don't.
Right.
You know, if there's a minor league system, if there's a feeder system, I really think we're going to see a couple players that bloom a little bit later than what is normal, who turn into pretty good pros. I think we can see that.
Neil, as always, thanks so much. Appreciate it. And the check will be in the mail to each of us.
Definitely. Go Josh Allen.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. By the way, if you're wondering last night between the Brewers playoff game and the Packers regular season game, who won the night in Milwaukee? The Packers. And in terms of the TV ratings, the Packers won Milwaukee last night. They beat out the Brewers.
Yeah, you called that. We were kicking that around on Friday's show with your brother Kevin on, just curious as to... And I was even thinking more bodies in the stands. How many people would maybe stay home and watch the Brewers since they're doing something pretty sweet that, well, if they keep this rolling, won't happen since 1982? But you said, they'll be there. They'll be showing up at Lambeau.
and then the other part is this, is that I haven't seen it yet, but I would assume the Patriots beat out the Red Sox on Sunday night. Because remember, they were head-to-head. And with what Major League Baseball was thinking about on that one, they had that really nice 4:09 time slot open against late NFL games. You know, knowing that the Patriots game was already scheduled with Kansas City months ago. So, you know, TBS and Fox already, TBS and Major League Baseball already knew that that existed. That, you know, and what was on TBS at 4:00? Big Bang Theory?
Or Friends? Or Everybody Loves Raymond? One of them.
Right.
You know.
I mean, really? Outside of sports, I mean, what's their lineup? Come on.
A lot of comedies.
Yeah.
Yep.
I mean, they've got TBS has flexibility to do anything, really. And they had time to plan on this. Yeah, 4:09 slot would have been best for everybody involved. Because, I mean, there's no way that the Red Sox beat out the Patriots on Sunday Night Football in Boston. And the Red Sox are currently incredibly popular. I mean, they're much more popular in Boston than the Brewers are in Milwaukee. Because the Red Sox have had a history of winning. The Brewers have had one World Series appearance where they lost in, what, I think they lost in seven games to the Cardinals, I think, right? Okay, so, but yeah, Green Bay won the night in Milwaukee. So there you go. Okay. I was asked any comment on Mike Watkins. He was cited for disorderly conduct 2 weeks ago. And other than that, Troy, I have no comment because I don't know anything beyond just what I read. I don't know. Mike was at practice last week when I was there. He also was sick last week, too. But other than that, I have no real comment on it whatsoever because I don't really know what happened other than what I read and I think was cited for disorderly conduct, but I don't know. So I'm usually pretty good at if I don't quite have all the facts on something. I think I'm pretty good at not guessing, so I'm not going to guess. We'll just see how it plays out. But I do appreciate the question, and I understand why the question, but yeah, I think it happened September 29th from what I remember.
You just hope it's nothing bad. I'm kind of sensing a trend.
Well, no, Mike's got a, you know... You know, my, in a lot of ways, Mike needs the basketball program.
He sure does. Yeah, absolutely. Completely agree.
And I don't mean the playing part. Okay, don't start. You know, don't be one of those people. Say, oh, did you hear what he said? Just slow down. He needs the structure of it.
Oh yeah, keep him there with Pat and the family, and get his head right as he moves forward. Absolutely.
He needs the locker room. He needs the structure of it. He needs the structure of going to school. He needs the structure of being with the Morgan Academic Center. He needs the structure even more than the basketball. Okay? Now, the basketball, obviously, is the part where you can dangle that carrot in front of him as, hey, okay, here's the good stuff. But he needs the structure of the whole thing. And I've always said that about Mike. That is not that, you know, so I'm not delving into any territory that I have not delved into before. I've been pretty straight about it the whole time. Mike, I've always felt Mike is one of those. And there are other players over the last 40 years that I've been here where I could tell you and give you a list of guys that I just felt that they needed the structure of whatever sports program they happened to be in at the time. That was important for them as a stepping stone to making sure that they stayed on that right road. So we'll see what they want to do with it. We'll see how it plays out. Other than that, I don't really know much more than what anybody has read about it. So,
well, with the resources that he has available to him, you just hope that that's one chapter that he can, you know, close. Put in the rearview mirror, and then...
Yeah, but Mike's got to have the ability to walk away, though.
Yeah.
You got to grow up in that way, because, look, that's one thing about being an athlete. You know, being an athlete, you've got a lot of people that, you know, when they get a couple into them, suddenly they find their level of courage, and now they're going to take on the big, bad athlete, and they're going to show their buddies that they're going to be. You know, and this happens all the time. I was talking to a guy today who was a bouncer downtown. He said that one guy kept getting up and he was trying to challenge four football players. And the four players were looking at him. He said it was not a tall guy, but the guy was inebriated. And because he was inebriated, you know, all of a sudden he had all that courage that he's going to go on and he's going to take on all these guys. And, you know, then to the credit of the football players, according to the bouncer, he says, I'm looking at him. And and this story was just told to me this morning. So he said the players looking like they called the bouncer over to get him out of there. So they show the responsibility, you know, in a restaurant to not engage. Now, and then he told me this incident happened. It was over the summertime, somewhere in the summer, and the players were fine. They weren't, they hadn't had anything, according to him. But this guy's up there trying to challenge him, trying whatever, and he was acting like a total. Well, that is not an uncommon story in college towns. And the key is you've got to be able to look at them and just say, get away, turn away, walk away. You're a coward. Fine, I'm a coward. Have a good one. You know, so Mike, whatever the circumstances happen to me, Mike's got to walk away. Just walk away. Okay? All right. And sometimes the solution, as hard as it sounds, really is that simple. Great to have you with us on the show today. Our thanks to Neil Coulong, breaking down the Steelers. Neil has moved from Arnold Palmer Latrobe Airport to the Murtha Airport in Johnstown as a possible Le'Veon Bell landing destination. As we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Welcome back. Great to have you with us. Always love downloading all these FTP files. still trying to get used to how they do this. Here we go. I steal that. That might be it. Yeah. Did you say we have emails? So what are the emails?
Yeah, we'll throw a few out here. Steve Jones at WKOK.com. That's our email address. This was from Don. Don sent us one not too long ago. He had thrown out...
Dear Steve, I hate you.
Nah, it wasn't that, no. But Mr. Apologist was thrown out there. So
Sean Gray, whatever.
No. Penn State was ranked in the top 10 because of a loss, yet have to beat anyone in the top 10. I am a fan, but Penn State is overrated. And what happened to the quote-unquote line position and Tommy Stevens? I think that's the burning question, whether Tommy is... Tommy truly 100% back healthy?
Well, that's why they hadn't used it till the Ohio State game, because A, he had been hurt, and B, they wanted to buy one more week to make sure he was all right. So then by the time they played him, they put it in. Everything depends on what, you know, you got to do what does a defense do during the course of the week? You know, and there have been some weeks, I'll be honest with you, I'll give you last year, some weeks where they practiced it during the week and then never used it in the game. Right, I mean, that happened. Now, this particular week going into Michigan State, I could tell during the week that they were not enamored with putting the package in this particular time. Now, why they didn't, you'd have to ask James that question, because I don't know. But I can tell, you know, what they want to do. I mean, some weeks they'll have it in there, and I'll say, oh, okay, it looks like they want to do it. Okay. Right? And then all of a sudden you get to the game and they don't do it. Okay. So they must have sat down in a meeting on Friday and said, you know, yes, no, yes, no, yes, no. Last week was not one of those weeks. You know, I could tell during the week that last week that they weren't going to probably use it. So, I mean, they practiced it all preseason. They obviously practiced it again, obviously, before Ohio State. So, I mean, it's still very much there. But, you know, a lot of it depends. And sometimes you get in there. I'll give you an example. Sometimes you get and you work on a play all week, all week, all week. And I remember asking Joe about this. And I said, if you don't mind me asking, I said, you know, I saw you work on whatever last week. Is it something that didn't fit or the way they defended? He says, nah. He says, we have one guy that couldn't quite run it right. And if there's one guy that doesn't run it right, you can't really use it. Well, I thought that was a pretty logical answer Joe gave. So I wonder in some cases if that ever comes into play. But, and as for being called an apologist, I think we ought, you know, if name calling is what we want to get into here, I don't really, you know, I'm not going to dignify that. I think that's, if you're trying to insult me, go ahead and insult me. But, you know, let's not cross any lines here. You know, I think I do my job pretty well.
So we got another email in from Matthew Shirk. Matthew was listening to yesterday's show when we had JJ call in from Williamsport when he was bringing up about Tommy Stevens, whether he should commit or not, commit to the game or not. Matthew says, I know what he is thinking, but from what I've seen, he will never be anywhere as good as Trace McSorley. Trace had a bit of a bad game, but of course he was only a small part of it. Maybe I'm reading too much or expecting too much, but my biggest disappointment is, for the third straight year, barring any miracle, Penn State will have a talented team that'll be outside of the playoff, and Trace deserves the Heisman and a chance at the playoff will come up short.
Yeah, well, they are going to come up short because no two-loss team has made it. Even though there are games in the schedule that can make up for it, it's hard to make up for two losses, and that's logical. As for Tommy, it'll be interesting to see next year when it's really fully Tommy's team and how it plays out with him. Because, remember, when Tommy has played, he has not played with the first unit. Tommy has played with usually second unit guys and so forth against other teams, mixture of first and seconds. So once it's all his, then we'll see how it plays from there. As for Trace McSorley, like I said yesterday, you know, certain things you think of during the course of a game, replacing Trace McSorley was not something that Jack or I even thought of during the course of the game. When JJ brought it up, that's the first time I ever thought of it. I mean, it's the first time I ever thought of it. You know, and believe me, we think about a wide variety of things, especially during commercial breaks. We'll say, well, gee, I wonder why they haven't gone to this. Like, you know, I'll give you one. Last year, Penn State ran this triple level play last year. Jack and I loved the play, all the options off it, how it really messed up a team. And he they rarely went back to it. So I mean, you know, so I mean, it's like not like we don't see certain things too, because we do.
This is another part of the email from Matthew Shirk I wanted to bring up. Yes, some things can happen. You have bad games. Even Tom Brady has bad games. But in the NFL, you have more room to work with. Also, I'm wondering if it's hard for Trace when his receivers are dropping so many of his passes. That's one thing I've been hearing about Juwan Johnson.
But
he's
you know
been
what?
Having a very challenging season so far.
But you know what? You know how many passes they dropped on Saturday? It was the first game all season. There were no drops. That's the odd part of it. They had 17 drops in the first five games. Not good. And Juwan, there's no question, he struggled. I think he's been the leader in that category. Yet Saturday was the one game. There were no drops. And that's just the timing of his email. That's all it is. That's just the time. It just turned out the timing of his email. Okay. That's the odd part about it. Saturday was the one day. Because that's absolutely legit, the first five games. Saturday happened to be one of those days that when it got thrown to them and they could make the catch, they made it. Now, does that affect your confidence in terms of going to somebody? Yeah. Yeah, it does. There's no question. And every quarterback's different about that. There was a wide receiver years ago who played for both the Vikings and for the Cowboys. And he said the biggest difference between Fran Tarkenton, in his opinion, and Roger Staubach was that when he played with Tarkenton, if he dropped a ball, Tarkenton did not go back to him. He said with Staubach, if he dropped a ball, Staubach would go right back to him. He said, and that increased his confidence as a receiver. Now, everybody is different, but that's just anecdotal about how they look at everything. So I'm going to close out the show. I'm going to apologize to Sean. I'm then going to apologize to the suit, apologize to my wife, apologize to 8 other people, because I am Mr. Apologist. That's what I do. And I apologize for apologizing.
Apology accepted.
You know, the odds of me losing sleep tonight are
99.99. I promise I won't change the Twitter account to Mr. Apologist PSU. I will not do that.
I mean, hey, must be fun being Don.
You're listening to News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury. You can hear us anywhere in the world with the Sunbury Broadcasting Corporation app.